everyone, and welcome to another episode of Devil's Shelix. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Sally. And welcome to application season. Today's episode is dedicated to learning about personal statements, how to craft an amazing personal statement that will get you where you want to go.
Yes, I am excited about this because personal statement is one of those documents that I think has a lot of hidden curriculum, which we have talked about in past episodes. This idea that there is an expectation and there is, in some sense, a secret format for how these things are done, but it's not necessarily clear from the prompts that you're given. But it is clear when you start to read examples or when you start to have people read it. So we're going to share all of our experiences writing personal statements and what a personal statement really is, what it should be, and how to start crafting yours.
And I have to say, I'm excited to have Kayla here because Kayla has read so many personal statements. She was on the admissions committee for the UC Berkeley, UC San Francisco graduate program in bioengineering, reading, would you say, about 100 PhD application personal statements? Well, the whole application, including the personal statement, across 2 years.
Yeah, 140.
Kind of a big deal. Kayla's read a lot of personal statements and she's been in the room when faculty are weighing the top students and deciding who is great and who is great, but is also going to get in.
And both Sally and I have read through lots of personal statements for as part of our graduate program, as part of peer review systems. So we've done lots of that. And we've written our own personal statements for a lot of different fellowships and grad school as well. So
basically, anytime you apply to something that's a big deal, you're going to have to be writing a personal statement. Mm-hmm. And Kayla, one of your maxims is that a personal statement is not personal. So can you break down for us what is the purpose of a personal statement and what should the overall content in a personal statement be?
Okay, this is my number one usual complaint for someone who's brand new to personal statement writing. A personal statement is not personal. And what I mean by that is a common mistake is to tell your whole life story about how when you were 5, you were playing with some blocks and then you realized you needed to be a scientist. And in 7th grade, you got a B on report, but that didn't discourage you from pursuing science. And then in high school, you were on the science team. And at the last moment, your Olympiad won and it was the best feeling ever. No. I don't care. Nobody cares. So like what actually is in a personal statement? So it's personal in the sense that it's your trajectory as it relates to your professional development. And there can be personal components, especially when you're in the early stages of career, if you're trying to make an argument that you are coming from a disadvantaged background or you have had some kind of non-traditional path, like maybe you spent some years working in between your undergrad degree and applying for graduate school. So there are personal elements, but what you're really focused on is explaining to a committee why they should believe that you are going to be committed to the thing that you say you're going to be committed to. So if we're talking about graduate school, like what in your trajectory has brought you to want to do a 6-year PhD? And how do we know that you're going to be ready for it?
Readiness in this context, I think there's a few components. One is your academic preparation. You don't really need to touch on that too much in your personal statement. They'll look at your transcript. So one is academic preparation. Are you academically like rigorous enough to do the work that's going to be needed at this program? Motivation. Do you actually want to be here or are you just doing it because you like science but don't want to go to med school, right? Or whatever, right? Some combination of like grit / persistence / perseverance, showing that like they know PhD is hard, they know med school is hard, whatever this personal statement is for, showing that you have what it takes and you have persisted in the past and you'll continue persisting in the future. Another key component to a principal statement at a high level, and then we'll kind of break down the structure in a minute, but at a high level, another key component, it needs to be specificity. So when you apply to undergrad, there's like the Common App where they send the same app to every school. But, you know, the Common App has a supplement where they ask specific questions. Why do you want to go to Northwestern instead of any of the other schools that you could have applied to, right? You need to be showing what about this school is a good training environment for you. And that goes back to what Kayla was saying, right? It's about your training and your personal development. So maybe Google, like, do they have a certain facility in your area? Do they have like leading professors in your area? Are they a national center for something that you care about? Like, do the research on websites with your Google friend and show that you've done that in your personal statement.
Yes. Yeah. So let's walk through the structure of a solid personal statement. At the beginning, it's okay to talk about, and perhaps even useful to talk about, a starting point of when or why you're interested in the topic that you're interested in. The motivation. I'm going to talk mostly in the context of applying for graduate school, but this, of course, could be the same idea of applying for a fellowship. And I can tell you that, especially in the life sciences, a lot of people like to talk about how a disease has affected them or someone they care about and why this has pushed them into the life science field or the medical field. This is not uncommon. So just be aware that you're not the only person that has thought of that.
So like, if it's true and truly your motivator, fine. But know that a non-single digit percent of your peers will be writing the same thing about how someone that they love was negatively impacted by some health thing.
You don't need to have like a sob story. I think a lot of people start off by trying to put like, oh, my life is the worst, and because of that, I want to do science. You don't have to do that. And I think it's okay to talk about things that were hard for you or things that were challenging to get to where you're at. But it's not okay to talk negatively about other people. So one of the things I have seen is people like complain about how their family just doesn't understand them.
Yeah. And I've also seen people that had really tough situations write about it in a way that is both clear and honest while also being professional. So instead of being like, my single parent abandoned me to do drugs, which was the case in this instance, right? Like, working through revisions, it became, in high school, I was the sole provider for my family as we entered the foster care system.
Yes.
So it's more fact focused.
Yes, those are the same stories. And I totally agree. The best way to handle those big challenges, if you have one of those to share, is to focus on the facts and focus on how your strengths were shining through the hard parts rather than the other way around, like how those hard parts were wearing down on you.
Yeah. And it's tough, right? Especially for fellowships that are targeted toward students who come from disadvantaged backgrounds or who have overcome a lot, right?
Yeah, it's a fine line. And okay, so the flip side of this is, maybe you don't have a tragic backstory. Great. That's awesome.
And you just love science.
Good for you. That's not a bad thing. Please don't like make up a sad story that feels very fake when someone reads it. Not okay. The flip side of this is that if you don't have a tragic backstory, another common thing to do is like talk about when you first loved science and why you love science. I think that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. As long as it's true, that's fine. A personal statement is not a place to lie, and it's not really a place to embellish. It's a place to stick to the facts, and the personal motivation should be a short and honest part. It should be 1 to 2 sentences at the beginning and move on. It doesn't have to like be historical. It could be like, in undergrad, I was pursuing a degree in physics and realized that there's a huge knowledge gap in X.
Or I used to be a civil engineering major, but now as part of that, I became passionate about climate change and realized that one of the most profound tools for climate change is engineering microbes for carbon capture, which is why I'm applying for bioengineering, right? Like, it can be a relatively recent, and it's like, think about if you were telling your cousin why you're applying to a PhD program at this school, what would you say? You'd be like, oh, I love women's health. They have a great OBGYN department. Women's health is awesome and understudied, and I'm passionate about it. And so I want to go to this school that has this department. I could work with any of these 5 professors there. It's going to be great. You know, so like, think about what your real true answer is and consider just writing that.
It doesn't have to be mind-blowing. It just has to be the story. I really like to give the punchline right up front. So it's like, here's where I came from. I have this experience from XYZ. If I was applying for graduate school, it might be like, because of my undergraduate research experience in X and Y, I'm interested in studying this in graduate school. I'm applying for this program because it's the best at this. And long term, I'm interested in continuing this as a career in XYZ, like maybe as a faculty or an industry. And then I would move on to my more fleshed out paragraphs about some of those experiences and related things that I have done that I don't necessarily have time to explain in a CV or other document that's going to be in the application.
Yes, fully aligned that the first paragraph should basically be a little intro and then basically a summary of everything else they're going to read. Because remember, the person that is reading this essay is a faculty member who's probably reading it like on an airplane. They don't have very much time. They have to read 140 of these over 2 weeks. Like, if they aren't vibing with you in the first paragraph, they might engage in some skimmage.
Yes. So you want to get those points clear. I've seen people underline or bold things. That can be good if you bold or underline the right things. So if you're not really sure how that's helping or not, then don't do it, I would say. If you can get some good feedback on whether, like from a mentor who has been through it, or preferably even like a faculty mentor, then that's a different story. For example, like sometimes I would see people underline, like, I am passionate about the chemistry of batteries. And it's like, okay, that's great, but so is the other 500 applicants. That's why they're applying to this program. And so you haven't actually told me anything special about you. Not helpful.
One of my tips, and I know we're supposed to save tips at the end, but this is a high bar. But if you can do it, you'll have a high probability of success. Every single sentence in your essay should be such that it could only have been written by you. So, for example, during my internship at the FDA, I researched wound dressings and metal hip implants. That's clearly about me, right? And then I would have a subsequent sentence about what I learned from that. But I am passionate about the chemistry of batteries. Anyone could have written that. So, when you're going through your essay and figuring out where to cut, it's those kinds of things. Now, you could say, like, my research experience at Lawrence Livermore National Lab made me realize how cool battery chemistry actually is. Now it's unique to you.
That is a much better way to frame. Okay, so then let's talk more about what those next 3 to 5 paragraphs are going to look like. They are going to go through, specifically for graduate school, the experience that you've had doing research and what you have learned from those, like what you've accomplished those, and then also how that's going to set you up to do your graduate degree or to do a degree in research, right? So it's like you can either work chronologically or in order of importance to you. So I tended to do them chronologically because that's the way the story made the most sense. It would be like, okay, so as a freshman, I started out in chemistry research. I have like an abridged version and a full-length version. So, you know, when those statements change, I like focus on the maybe one or two experiences that were most relevant to what I'm applying for. But if I have a full version, then I might talk more about some of the projects that I did that weren't as successful or weren't as interesting, but were still like important parts of the story. In the abridged version, be like, I did some undergraduate research in chemistry, learned about materials. For various reasons, transitioned into bioengineering, studied this, and then that has been really exciting. And now I want to do this long term. So that's one way to set it up. And then there's some of those other things that you may or may not want to pack into the application, depending on what they're looking for. In the case of a graduate school application and a lot of fellowship applications, especially like NSF, which is a big one at that same stage. You probably want to talk about non-research things as well. So, like if you've done any kind of science outreach or advocacy or anything that really relates to your professional career.
Leadership also could be included, but be careful, man. Okay. Like, talk about clubs sparingly because you don't want to create the illusion that you're doing so many other things that you aren't actually dedicated to research. So I would say, like, if you have one meaningful club or sport leadership sort of thing, fine. But like, I don't want to see a paragraph about your sports team and a paragraph about your honors club and a paragraph about your future business leaders club and a paragraph about whatever, right? Like, maybe this is just a Berkeley thing.
I think it's more of a Berkeley thing, but it does raise another question, which is the role of like how much you should talk about professional societies or like student groups in general. And I think that those are only helpful to talk about if you actually participated.
I would say raise a bar higher if you contributed.
Yes.
If you just attended the events, no one cares. If you were organizing events, if you were like contributing in some way, and the event isn't just like a drinking party, right? You're inviting people to like talk, whatever, fine.
Yeah. And then your follow-up sentence or two becomes what you actually did. But what I cringe a little bit at is seeing someone say, like, I was part of the robotics engineering group. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Did you just like show up? Did you even go? Did you just get on their email list? Like, what does that mean? If you're like, I was part of the science outreach club to local elementary schools, and I went to 6 elementary schools in 2022, and we did 1-hour shows for 50 first graders, I'd be like, okay, now I have a better idea of what you're doing.
Exactly. And I would also say, if there's other things that took away from your time researching and studying, like, for example, a job that you had to earn money that you needed, you can say that. You don't need to dwell on it. But like, if you were working full time or part time or at all, like, you can include that as a sentence, being like, I also balance this with my responsibilities in like with this job or with work study, etc. So if there's other things that are contributing to like why you didn't spend as much time in the lab as a peer, just say it. Okay, so within each paragraph about each internship or research experience or whatever that you're focusing on, there's also a structure for what goes in those paragraphs. So I would say, first sentence, summary. I interned at X, researching X. With the remaining sentences, you want to show, what problem were you trying to solve? What was the approach to solve it? What was your role within the team that was solving it? And what was the outcomes? I feel like, what's the problem and what's the approach? People usually hit. Like, that's sort of straightforward. What is your role within the team is crucial, because no one really believes that like you solved climate change, but they might believe that you like worked in a team focused on developing this battery and improving its performance. And the last one is most important, outcomes. Now, Kayla, whenever we talk about this, including to like live student groups, we always get the question, like, Sally, I did this research internship and it was fun and I learned a lot, but like, there aren't really any outcomes. So what do I put? So Kayla, can you talk us through what kind of things can be included in this outcomes area and why it's so important?
Yeah. So look, we know how research goes. We know that in your 3-month internship, you did not write an entire paper, or you did not solve all of bacteria antibiotic resistance. So that's fine. The outcomes that you can talk about are anything from, I tested a hypothesis and we learned that we were wrong, to I developed a protocol and now the lab is using it, or I developed a library that is now getting tested, or my project revealed that this was not a good method for sorting cells or using this as a biomarker. It doesn't have to be a paper, although that's great if it does. And if it does result in the paper, you can still say like what in that paper you actually did. Because again, if you tell me that you wrote an entire paper in 3 months, I am going to be very suspicious. So
it does happen, right? So by being specific, if you did write a paper by yourself in 3 months because you had a great finding and you got it done, great. Be specific so they believe you. And I would also say other outcomes can include presenting at lab meeting.
Yes.
Can include training other people on the method that you developed or the optimizations that you implemented so that other people are using your contributions after you leave. It can be presenting at the end of summer poster session. It can be any of these things. It can be training. Yeah. So don't forget about training other people, things like that. And then I would say, think also, there might be some things that you did in lab that would be better for your PI to talk about in a rec letter. So this would be like, this example would date me, but that's okay. In one of my classes, we were talking about like new genomic technology. One of them was CRISPR. Like, it was brand new. Like, no one was using it yet, but we had all read the papers. And one was like Gibson assembly. So then I was asking my mentor, I was like, why don't we use Gibson assembly? And he was like, we just use restriction enzymes. It's what everyone does. You can try it if you want. So then I tried it. It worked great. And then I was like, everyone, we should do this. And then they did. And like one of the other grad students who wasn't my mentor was also excited. And so we like worked together. So like, that's weird to talk about in your own essay, but I'm pretty sure my PI would have written in my rec letter, like, Sally learned something from class and she suggested it. And then she took the initiative, you know, so like that kind of thing. If you're contributing to the lab in like little ways, make sure that you remember that so that you can imply, you can sort of remind your recommenders to put it in their letter of recommendation. Also, please listen to our previous episode called Letters of Recommendation, all about how to solicit letters of recommendation from your recommenders.
Yes, it's great.
It was the number one question we would get.
Yes, everything that you've been stressing about, we talk about it there.
Yeah.
Okay, so then back to talking about what you've been doing. It's very important to say, as Sally said, and I can't reiterate this enough, like what the problem is, what specifically you or your group was trying to solve, and then what you did as part of that group. Again, just be honest. Like, don't try to. I think what's more concerning to me is if not that somebody had a small part in the research, but when they try to make it seem bigger than it was. Because it's usually clear that either they're being vague or either they're talking about the project as a whole. And that's more concerning to me. I don't actually know what you did. I don't know if you just don't know to tell me precisely what you did or you're trying to embellish it. It's just very problematic. But on the note of specific, we don't need like the detail of what buffers you used. Like nothing that would go into a methods paper, more like the approach as a general rule. Like I am trying to build, again, I'm trying to build a library of virus designs rather than I use this program to build this library of designs, which included these five capsid types.
I would say one thing where you can help your application shine is including numbers and quantified metrics. So saying like, I improved the workflow for small volume sample analysis. Or you could say, previously our lab was able to do samples as small as 3 microliters, but there was a big need to test even smaller samples. And I was able to optimize the workflow and develop a tool that allowed us to test samples as small as 0.4 microliters, a decrease of 95% or whatever, right? So like, as much as you can be quantify, or like I brought in a new protocol and now 7 people are using it. Or like I screened 25 microRNAs and identified the one that increased silencing by 97%. Anything that you can put that is specific in numbers. These are numbers people, right? So you should never have any jargon, but it's okay to have specific numbers.
One more thing on the note of what goes in as a general structure. We touched on this briefly, but any kind of extenuating circumstances that have that would make you non-traditional applicant, you can put a paragraph on that. For example, I saw some essays where someone had like a medical condition, and you don't have to like give specifics. You don't have to share things that are personal or private, but just in a professional statement saying like, I did take some time off for personal reasons for a semester, but you can see that when I returned, I was able to go back to XYZ. And then the next semester, I again started up some regular research activities or something like this, like how you move through that. And now you're where you're at.
Another extenuating circumstance that students often struggle with how to communicate is if their freshman grades are really bad, or their freshman and sophomore grades are worse than their junior or senior grades. So if it's your freshman grades are bad because you're like slacking off, like, fine. But for a lot of students, when I'm mentoring them and working with them on their essays, I'm like, okay, like I'm looking at your transcript. That's like, what was going on freshman year that was different than subsequent years? Like a lot of times it would be students and they'd be like, I went to a high school with 1,000 students. No one really cared about school very much. So it was easy to be the number one student without developing any study skills. So in college, I like didn't study because I didn't know that that's how it was done. And that they're like, okay, so that's why my grades are bad freshman year. You can say like early in my collegiate experience, a transition from my super large, unpersonalized public high school in such and such place was really challenging for me, but I persevered and I took the initiative to get tutoring and develop study skills. And after sophomore year, when these study skills were clearly and strongly in place, I was able to excel in my classes and even make the honor roll. Or like, you can say it in a professional way that's not, again, you're not like putting down your high school, but you're kind of explaining that you were just slacking off and that you did personal growth and perseverance to get where you are.
Yes. And that shows that you were gritty, which is important, especially going into a 6-year research degree
or med school or an MBA or whatever.
The last part of the structure would be a conclusion paragraph. You don't need to recap everything that you just told me. That's a waste of space. It's better to just use a very short conclusion where you say, these are the things that I'm interested in, the specific program that I am applying to. So you might say, like, I'm really excited about, well, for us, like, I'm really excited about Berkeley's program because they have the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine, and they have the...
And they have QB3, and they have, like, this great facility for genome sequencing, right? And also, speaking of Berkeley, like, don't reference faculty who aren't in the department, just as a tip.
That's another thing, is I'd be excited to work with, and then insert 3 faculty names that are relevant for the things that you're saying you're interested in doing. But you can still leave it open-ended, because the reality is that there are a lot of people that you may end up moving around.
You should list at least 3 people specifically by name. Mm-hmm. But you should also be open-ended and say, and I know there's a lot of other faculty doing cool work in tissue engineering. Or like, I know you have rotation programs and I'm excited to like try out many different options or whatever. And I would also add, if this is a personal statement for something like a summer workshop or something where you are going to have a high degree of interaction with other peers, you must say not only how the workshop is going to help you, but how you are going to positively contribute to the workshop. So like, you don't necessarily need to say how like you, Kayla, are going to personally contribute to Berkeley PhD program. But when you apply to be a faculty, you certainly do need to say why you, Kayla, are going to personally contribute to the peer environment of the other faculty. So you'll need to say like, I would collaborate with so-and-so. Like, I bring in this new skill set that no one in your department has yet. Or like, I see that you don't have anyone in this space and I can fill that niche while still overlapping with these other people. So think about if it's a situation where it would be appropriate to share how you can contribute to the community.
Yeah. And similarly, if you're applying for a fellowship, you might say how you are going to use that fellowship to do something that you otherwise couldn't or wouldn't.
Oh yeah. And in my experience, the less money they're giving you, the more specific you should be. I'm going to use this $2,000 to buy a laptop. I'm going to use this $5,000 to support an expensive gene sequencing project and go to a conference. I'm going to use this PhD to become a professor at an R1 school. So like, the less money they're giving you, the more specific you need to be. And the more money they're giving you, the more you need to talk about how this is going to benefit you for the rest of your life.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So overall structure, Sally, can we just rapid fire through all of our pro tips?
Yeah, I'll go first, girl. Number one, write it in advance so that you have time to get people to read it. People that have won the award, ideally.
If you can, we're talking like 2 to 3 months ahead. You're starting.
Because why do you need to have so much time? I will tell you this. As someone who won NSF and got into grad school, that's enough early career success that people want you to read their essays. One time, one of my best friends gave me her essay, like literally like 14, maybe 35 hours before it was due. And I read it and I was like, oh, there's so many problems. Because she was my best friend, I called her on the phone. I was like, look, you're amazing. You're a superstar and you have what it takes to win this award. However, what is written on this page is not good and you will not win because it is not following the formula. It is not following the secret rubric. It's not hitting thing. It's not answering questions that were specifically asked in the prompt. And she's like, wow, my PI has read this. 3 of my friends have read this. They just said it was fine. And I was like, when did your PI read this? And she was like, 2 days ago. And I was like, you've been written off, because they feel like even if they spend the time to make the edits, you won't have time to incorporate them. And I was like, do you have time to make the edits? And she was like, yeah, I'll stay up all night. I'll do it. And I was like, okay, here you go. Boom, 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 boom. I talked to her on the phone about the key issues. I went into the document and I redlined it to show her like how to restructure things. I gave like, I think I did like 1 paragraph as an example and said, do this for all the paragraphs. And she got it. And she called me up after and she was like, thank you so much. I had no idea. And I was like, it's not your fault. Like, she felt really guilty. I was like, it's not your fault. The only thing I would do differently is like write it in advance so that more people could have felt open to give honest feedback.
Yeah. If you want good feedback, you need to give your readers time to read it.
Which is why we're releasing this episode in August when the big grad school apps and NSF apps are due in October, November. Don't quote me on that.
Sometime in the fall. But now is the time to write. It's the bottom line. And I've definitely gotten requests for reads within a week of the deadline. And I totally agree. It's like you get something that you know is going to take at least another round of revision. And each of those revisions is going to take a couple days. And I don't have time to read it today. So it's going to have to wait till tomorrow. It's like you got to give all of that iterative process time. And on a related note, if you're lucky enough to have somebody that's close mentor for you that can give you a multiple rounds of feedback, getting feedback early, like on an outline stage, is so much more beneficial than like writing the whole thing blindly and then getting to that and realizing that none of it's really on point. So if you can check in with someone for even a couple of minutes and be like, is this on the right track? They can quickly be like, that no, this yes, try this, rearrange here, go. And then you write, it's going to be so much more efficient.
Totally agree. Kayla, what other tips do you have?
Okay, here are some of my tips/complaints. Show, don't tell. We talk about this a lot. You want to show that you have the skills. You want to show that you have the experience, not tell someone. So that would be the difference of saying, I am a persistent person, versus it took 23 tries to get the cloning to work. And I tried all of these different ways. And eventually I found the one that worked. You never have to say persistent, but it's clear. But on that note, you don't have to talk about like how much time you spent on something. It kind of reads weird if you're like, I spent 42 hours in lab in one day.
That's not healthy. Okay, here's Sally's rant of the episode part two. In grad school, everyone always brags, not everyone, but like, you know, the type. People brag about how many hours they spend in the lab. So if you hear someone and they're like, I spent 100 hours in lab this week. It's like, first of all, you probably have a toxic mentor. But if you don't, it's like, okay, you're spending twice as much time in the lab as everyone else. And it's a badge of honor. But if I was like, it took me 12 years to graduate. One could say that I'm also spending twice as much time in the lab as everyone else. But it's not a good thing. If you're spending a lot of time in the lab, rethink how you spend your time and how you're efficient. This is one thing I've really learned in the industry is like how to be critical and efficient and get things done.
You don't need to put in sob stories or martyr stories about that. It's more how you like worked through a problem. Or if you, instead of saying, I'm passionate about this, you can just say that you've done a lot of work in this space. And that will show that you are passionate about that thing. On a related note, another tip is minimize reflective sentences.
Oh, I knew you would say this. It's so true.
So it's like sentences, people usually write them to conclude a paragraph. It's like, from this experience, I learned that I could be a better person and a better scientist. Cut that. We don't need that.
It's okay to say, from this experience, I gained, or from this internship, I gained valuable insight about how to work effectively with teams and experience on HPLC and LCMS. Like, it's okay to say concrete things that you learned, but it's not okay to say vibes.
You should try to stick to 1 to 2 vibe sentences in your entire essay. More than that, and you're probably overdoing it.
And like one of them should be, I love your program. So you have one freebie to use at your will.
The next one is formal writing. We want formal writing here. I've seen so many personal essays where it's like they're writing, it's like you're text messaging your best friend. No, no, no. This is a professional statement. This is not a time for contractions.
Okay. I disagree on contractions.
Oh, I hate contractions. This could be on the level of like a writing philosophy, but I really hate contractions in formal writing. We don't do it in papers. Why should we do it?
I think it's an art to balancing professional writing with your voice. Your voice should shine through. They should be able, someone who knows you should be able to read your essay and know it was written by you. And that's because it like says what school you went to and what lab you worked in. It's an art to learn how your voice can shine through. But like if both of our PIs read a personal statement by both of us with the bio details redacted, they would be able to tell, like, oh, that's Sally, she's going off again. Like, oh, that Kayla, no contractions anywhere. You know, like, they would be able to tell. Right, don't you think?
They definitely would. I can tell your writing style.
Yeah, maybe that's just me. Maybe I just, like, have no filter so much that my vibes come through in my fellowship applications. But hey, it's been an effective strategy for me. I'm sorry. Like,
okay, well, you know, the listeners, you guys can take from this what you would like on contraction specifically. But still, I still think there's a boundary of professionalism versus, like, text messaging your best friend.
Absolutely agree. Also, on that note, I would like to institute a ban on what I call third grade adjectives. Good, bad, nice, fun. Anything that a third grader would say, you can't put it in there. Right? Like, I also ban, like, PhD level words, like hegemony and shit like that. And also this is one of my pet peeves. You have to use active verbs, not was, not did, not were, but like active and specific verbs will help bring your writing to the next level. Another one that I hated when it was enforced on me in high school, but that really made me a stronger writer. I had a high school history teacher who banned from his classroom the word which, W-H-I-C-H. And I was like, Mr. Whatever, you are the worst. How can you not use which? But the answer is, if you go to your most recent piece of writing, you control F the word which, and you force yourself to remove the word which, it will force you to be more creative with your verbs and with your sentences to make a more compelling sentence. And that kind of thing is really important.
I am a personal offender of the unnecessary phrases crime.
I know, because I edit a lot of your stuff.
I know. My first drafts are always too wordy. They are always too wordy. I have to go through them.
Yeah. Anytime that you're saying, I think, I feel, whatever, that can all go. They know you think it's your essay. They know you felt that way. Their read is like, any sentence that starts with I can probably go.
Cut down those unnecessary phrases, clean it up, tighten it up. If you're not really sure what it means to clean up a sentence or to write formally, there are lots of books on this. I'll put my personal favorite in the show notes. We're not paid for this advertisement, guys.
I feel like when it comes to academic writing, it really, like, people that are good at it, people that work really hard to improve, especially for STEM majors, there's not a lot of people in undergrad giving you line by line feedback on your writing. You submit an essay, as long as you answer the technical question, you'll get an A. Or you write a one paragraph about why Michaelis Menten, whatever, you get an A. Like, no one cares, right? But when it comes to winning awards and getting your manuscript published at the highest level and getting fellowships, getting into grad school, it really does come down to some of these writing fundamentals. And some people, like, including myself, I had amazing, astounding high school English and language arts teachers. And they were line by lining everything. Even if you got a 98, your essay was redlined everywhere just to show me how I could do better next time. Like, they invested in me and all the other girls. It was the all-girls school. All the other girls in my high school. It's not like they only invested in girls. There just were no boys. All the other girls in my school to help us improve our writing. And so then I entered college and I see that my friends who didn't have that in high school, there's fewer opportunities to develop that in college. And so when Kayla is going to recommend this, like, grammar and writing book, don't feel bad about using it. I think there's a lot of hesitancy to use this kind of resource because you feel like you already know how to write, or you should already know how to write. But I have benefited from, I don't know if it's the same book, but I had one in college that I would use when I was struggling with my writing or to figure out how to make my thoughts come across in a more clear way. So there's no shame in, like, picking up a textbook or reference book like this and using it to improve your writing, because it will help you win money.
We need to address now AI and writing.
Have you seen this with your students and peers, like people using AI to write the first draft of something?
Yeah. And I've tried it.
And?
Here's my thoughts. Okay. So first of all, you should be careful about what you put into these kinds of systems on a basic level, like IP level, right? Like, everything you're putting in there is now data for the universe. Be careful what you put in. Let's say that you are putting in something in that you're not too worried about. Okay, fine. I have like experimented with asking it to give me papers and it hallucinated lots of papers. It's very bad at giving.
Here's what I did on ChatGPT. I said, maybe I shouldn't have done this, but I was like, here's my name. Please write me a document that I can submit for my NIH style bio sketch. So it got all the sections right. And it must have Googled my name because it like put the right school for one of my two schools and it put engineering. But then when it has to generate the bibliography or like my, it just made up paper titles. And then I was like, well, maybe it doesn't know about me. Like, let's put a famous professor. So I put like a moderately, well, like they don't have a Wikipedia page, but like, you know, I pick someone in the middle, right? They're not a junior faculty, but they don't have a Wikipedia page. I put them in and the paragraphs were like more accurate. Like they do work at that school and like that is their subfield. But again, all of the papers were totally fake. Some of the journals were fake.
And similarly, like if you're using this to try to write your research part of it, like this is not, I have seen a lot of inaccuracies, even in the parts where it's trying to conceptualize a research field. Because, I mean, you think about it, like you're supposed to be working on the cutting edge of research. And to my understanding, the way these systems are working is like aggregating a bunch of data. So if there's not a lot of data on the thing that you're looking for, how is it going to make an accurate statement, right? And it's not designed to do research. It's not very good at doing research. So don't expect that. And it's also actually not that good at some of this clear-cut writing. I've seen it's supposed to be a language form. So if the internet is bad at talking, I'm going to offend some AI scientists for sure. But like whatever data set it's pulling from, I don't know that that's necessarily like the height of human writing.
Boom. Lots of unnecessary phrases.
At best, maybe you're using it to like get a thought into words, but you should not trust it for your statements. Like you need to be reading your statements and making sure that they are accurate, that they still follow the rules that we talked about, that they're like clarity, like conciseness, all of these things. You can't trust it to do it for you or better than you. So that's my word of caution. Maybe someday it will be better. That would be great, but not today.
Yeah, I will add, I saw on Twitter a tweet that was talking about one of the journals in some field, I don't even know. Apparently now, or maybe it was a preprint server, whatever. When you submit your article, you have to do all like the admin and put all this info. One of them was a tick box that was like, check here if you use AI language processing to generate any part of this manuscript or any initial draft of this manuscript. And you had to check. So I think that kind of checkbox is coming more broadly. So those are your tips.
I think that concludes our time.
Just put yourself out there, write the personal statement. There's nothing worse than a blank page. So start with something that you know is bad and you can make an improvements from there. We know that NSF application season is coming up for the National Science Foundation Graduate Research Fellowship Program. So our next episode is going to be about specifically tips for applying to that fellowship program, which will be a little bit broadly applicable. We covered the overview here, but we're going to dive deep in the next episode. So please share this episode with someone you know that is applying to something. And from the last episode, you should know a lot of people who are applying to a lot of stuff.
We have a lot of past episodes related to starting graduate school, research, finding mentors, mentorship, all those things that are relevant at this similar stage. So please check those out and tell someone about this podcast.
Yes, please. All right. Thanks for listening and we'll catch
Thank
you next
you.
Time.